Hey gang, I'm here to talk to you, man. If you're in a band in Austin and you're practicing in the garage, there's no way you're gonna live through the summer. It is so hot. It's like 108 degrees outside. What is wrong with you? Okay, I'm gonna tell you about a place where they got the air conditioning. They got the microphones. They got the sweet PAs. I'm talking about Space. Space is a state-of-the-art affordable venue for rehearsal and recording located just a few short miles south of downtown Austin. Countless pros, including myself, rehearse there. 512-448-9518 or go to spaceatx.com. Countless pros, including myself. I wrote that. What's wrong with me? Let's get down.
You may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you today. I have a guy you might not know by name. He is from behind the scenes, but you've felt his work. He's the production manager at the Continental Club. Been a sound guy there for a long time. C-Boys, and works with Nomad Sound. So he's been running some sound. Some stuff has been going on that you've been aware of, but you didn't know it was this guy. Maybe you've seen Social Distortion or Jane's Addiction. He runs front of house for those guys. So when it sounds good, it's this dude. It's Jamie Wellworth. Fantastic guy. I've been told for a long time to get him on the show. And my friend Todd Wolfson sent an introductory email saying, hey, you guys should do this because this is going to be entertaining for the people. And he wasn't wrong. This was a great conversation. People underestimated just how much fun we would have talking. I think I made a new friend. I think that Jamie did too. I've known him for a while. Kind of peripherally. We don't really know each other, but, you know, I was always a little bit intimidated by him. He's a tough-looking guy. He sounds tough, but he is a teddy bear. Very, very great guy. Fantastic father of four and a survivor of health issues and even himself. This is a great conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Before we get to that, let me tell you what's going on with me. Last night, I moderated this panel for the Austin Music Foundation. And it was fantastic. A lot of great people on the panel. The place filled up. Tons of people were there paying attention. And they asked questions at the end. And I think it went really well. I feel like I was doing my job as a moderator. It was interesting because I did have to cut people off a couple of times. And that felt weird. Because one time they were going into a thing that they're going to do at the next panel, like next week. So I was like, hey, man, that's for next week. But I said it nicer than I just did, a little more diplomatically. And anyway, I had a great time, made some new friends, met some new people. A lot of nice people came up afterwards, said stuff, all nice stuff pretty much. One guy slipped me a note and felt like he when he tried to talk to me, I brushed him off, and I didn't really mean to do that. So, sir, if you're out there, I'm sorry about that. I did not mean to do that. Those things happen. So sorry about that, sir. If I ever see you again, we can sit down and talk. All right. So yeah, the panel was fantastic. The guests were fantastic, or the panelists were fantastic, as I should say. So I want to thank the Austin Music Foundation, Alex and Jen over there. They do a great job. I want to thank the One to One, Destiny, Greg, all the gang, keeping it running smoothly over there. And I got to see Brandon Temple and Ephraim Owens play after we did that panel. They're just amazing, man. Those guys are masters of the universe. If you live in Austin, you should get out there to see them. They play at the One to One Bar, but they also play at the Continental Club Gallery. I've seen them play there a lot. And that leads me into today's guest, who is the production manager over there at the Continental Club. This is Jamie Wellworth, a fantastic guy, father of four, as I said, a survivor of health issues and himself. We sit down and have a fantastic conversation about his journey in music, what Robert Plant likes in his monitors, and running sound for one of your idols, Jane's Addiction. All right? Here's my new friend, Jamie Wellworth. Fantastic guy. Let's get down.
Is there a
you're supposed to put away your thing when you're done using it.
Yeah.
before you move on to the next thing. However, I'm a grown man. This is my apartment, and I can leave cables yes, wherever you can. I want.
But is that a is that really a Montessori kind of thing to
yeah,
do?
Yeah,
really?
Those are things that you learn when in early on. They teach you a lot of practical life stuff, like how to carry things, how to pour.
Interesting.
Dude, I've got mad pouring skills.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, you've never seen anyone pour like me.
All right. Cheers. Here's to you.
So, you're off the road right now?
Yeah, I got home on Friday, and I'm home till till October right now. So,
and you're doing Jane's Addiction?
Jane's Addiction, yeah. Yeah.
How's that?
What
a great band to get to.
Well, if you had told me 25 years ago that I'd be mixing Jane's Addiction, it's just, you know, they're one of my dream bands. Actually, it's funny. My old band, years ago, this all ties into Lenny Kravitz's dick. But,
oh, good. this is good because this is coming out tomorrow, so it'll be timely. It'll still be in the news. Boy. It'll still be trending.
My best friend, John, who just, he was the singer for my band, who I just showed you the picture. I was like, oh, here, of course, yeah, he sends it to me, right? Anyway, year 1988, I guess, or something like that, we actually stood out in back of this venue in Albany, New York. Jane's Addiction had just played. And we had a cassette tape of our band. Conceptual Raunch was the band. Or was it?
Conceptual Raunch?
Yeah, or it was Tate's Baby Lives, one of the two. And there's a Tate's Baby that was here. Yeah, it was either one of those
That's
bands.
A fucking great name.
And we're trying to give it to Perry. He comes out and we're like, Perry, you know, like just fans, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, we love your band. Yeah, and just, you know, that band was revolutionary musically for me. I mean, I love that band.
It came was from, 88 was before Nothing Shocking? Yeah.
It was.
And it was then, when they were on XXX?
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
And then Nothing Shocking came out. I was like, oh, game over. I mean, this is just the stuff that, you know, dreams are made of. But so years later, you know, I got the call. I literally got the call and Big Kev, Kevin Lemoyne, right? And I got the call and I thought he was fucking with me. Really, I really did, because it was like when it was like, huh? You know, he was like, hey, do you want to mix Jane's Addiction? I was like, you know.
Is that how you get jobs like that? Your friend Big Kevin just calls you and goes, hey man, you wanna mix Jane's Addiction?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of like that. It usually is word of mouth when it comes to stuff like that. I mean, it is. I've for years and years and years I had a resume that I never used, right? And I still don't think of that, even though my resume looks okay, you know what I mean? Yeah. I don't think I've ever gotten a job from a resume. And I think it's just word of mouth, and you know, it obviously if you got skills, you know.
Yeah. That goes without saying, but there's a theory, and last night at that panel, Stefano brought it up, and I've talked about it with tons of people on this show. You can be the greatest at whatever you do, but usually people will take a cool person.
Okay.
That's how the word of mouth thing happens.
There's a whole thing about that as well. You could be the most
not to say you're not a badass, no, but you're badass enough and you're fucking cool enough. Right. There you go, boom.
That's one of the cool things that I do. I really do work, and I really take pride in my job and all that stuff. But I think that one of the deals is that you could be the most talented engineer in the world, but if you're a dick, nobody wants to hang out with you on a bus or in a van or whatever, or on a plane flight. You know what I mean? People are just like, you know, but if you could hang and have that experience of just being light, you know, have lots of laughter, you know, jokes and the whole nine yards, then people want to hang out and be like, oh, well, you know, the miserable, everybody thinks that, you know, oh, I want to go on the road, you know, like literally the 20 hours that you're traveling to, you know, for those 2 hours of glory, you know what I mean? It's like, it's, you know, the trade-off is amazing, but still that 20 hours of traveling is just, you know, can be miserable, you know?
Yeah.
And some people, it just really runs into the ground. You've always heard the joke about the sound guy always being, you know, the crotchety old guy or whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I never want to do that. No. I never want to be that guy, because I want to treat bands with respect, as artists. I mean, just like I wanted to be treated as a friend, as a person. You know what I mean? I want them to have the same experience that, you know, an amazing experience on stage, you know, regardless, even if whether it's at the Continental Club or whether it's at Madison Square Garden. Yeah. It's the same deal, you know? We want to be treated with respect, and you want to do your job to the best of your ability. Not, you know, I don't want to be that crotchety dude, you know? So that's not, though.
I mean, it's a testament as to when you had to go in and have surgery earlier this year.
Yeah.
A testament as to what kind of person you are. And I'm sorry to make this comparison, but a few years ago,
we're talking about Lenny's penis again?
We were talking about Lenny's penis. you are almost as likable as Lenny's penis.
Shit. That's fucked up. Can I get that in a card and hand that out?
I think you should put that on there. A few years ago, I have this dog named Taylor, and I took him to the vet, and I was in an accident coming home from the vet, and to get out and help the people, I asked someone to hold his leash. He got out of his leash and took off. He was out for 7 hours. Dude, we had like 25 friends out searching for him, handing out flyers of pictures of him and all this stuff. It's a testament, and that's the only thing I could think is like, my dog is really cool, and people like him.
Yeah.
Like, they really like that dog, because look at all these people that just left work, like, oh, shit. My friend's dog is loose. We gotta
Johnny's
go save
dog.
Him.
Yeah,
and that's what happened. Like when you were sick, you know, like
I wish
people
I had
came
a dog.
Out.
That would have been better, I think.
Well, yeah, how many kids do you have? Three or four?
I have four.
Four.
Yeah.
A new one.
A newborn. She's she's 6 months old.
Are they all girls?
My son, poor Julian. It's not. He's got one boy, and there's a set of twins, a boy and a girl, Julian and Scarlett, and then Zion and Uma. Uma Cortizone is the newest
little
girl. Yeah. She's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, man, that's, you guys have a full house.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah. There's a big backstory to that, and I'm not sure if I'm going to get into it on here. But, it's funny. I will tell you, though, when I had testicular cancer, and they told me that I would never have children. And one testicle, four children. I literally, I never thought that this was going to happen, was that I actually had to get snipped, because I was like, I can't go on like this.
I can't
have any more kids. I mean, I love my children, believe me, I do, and so I'm very much involved.
From one superhuman testicle
came
four lives.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, I think they're going to fly at some point, too. Yeah.
The testicle or the kids?
The kid, both. I mean, I hope. Well, the testicle flies all the time, but I hope the kids.
Everybody that knew you were coming in here told me this was going to happen. They were like, "You're going to love talking to this dude."
Good. Thanks.
And I don't know what kind of thing we're going to do, but so far this is awesome.
Yeah.
So hey, what's it like running sound at what is it like running sound at Madison Square Garden? That's a good question, because I don't know what that's like.
Do you want the technical version, or do you want the I'm running sound in Madison Square Garden version?
Yeah, that part. The technical stuff I wouldn't even understand.
I'm growing up in New York.
Yeah.
I'm a Knicks fan. I'm a huge New York Knicks fan. And it's hard to be a Knicks fan. But that being said, when we coming into Madison Square, everybody was getting pictures with, on the stage and all that stuff. I was getting pictures with the freaking parquet floor of, with the,
and the
jerseys in the rafters and the whole nine yards. I mean, I literally was like having security take me pictures. I was like, this is the floor that they play on. You know, it's just a little ridiculous. It was quite the experience. I mean, I was, blown away, and I got to go down to the locker rooms and the whole nine yards.
That's awesome.
It was really cool. I didn't even realize. And then I was like, oh, wait, we're putting on a rock show. I was just so about the Knicks game, the Knicks and the hallowed ground of the Garden, I mean, I've seen so many shows over the years there. And it's, so many sporting events and the whole nine yards. I mean, it's just one of those places. It's like very
sacred.
It's got a vibe.
It's got a vibe.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
I was just in New York. We went up on Friday, and I guess it was the last night of the U2 residency, and a couple guys from our band tried to go and get scalp tickets, but
they didn't go?
They didn't go because they were like, scalpers here are freaky.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
and also, they were like, I don't know if these are even real.
Right.
Like, it's in New York. People can get some badass fake stuff.
Well, the cool thing about most of the tickets nowadays is that if it doesn't have a scanning... Mm-hmm. You know how they do at festivals now that you can actually, you wear the band and you can scan it. Yeah. They have the strip in it. The same deal as with like a $100 bill or whatever.
Right.
You can actually see that nowadays. So,
oh, that's good.
Yeah. But it's funny about that U2 thing. I was reading something about that, and their hospitality, there's a forum down below, right?
Right.
In the garden that they usually throw smaller shows at. That's still $2,000-$3,000. 4,000 people or something like that.
Wow.
It's a theater. Well, U2 used the theater as their catering.
Oh, Jesus.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean? That's the kind of scope that U2 is on.
They are on a different...
A whole different level, yeah.
Even though, what? Shit, sorry.
Sorry.
Learn how to turn your phone off. So how long are these tours like with Jane's Addiction? Well,
Jane's is a little older, so I gotta choose my words carefully. The most I've been out with them is 3.5 weeks or something like that.
They have families too.
Perry brings his kids on the road a lot.
Oh, yeah?
We were just in Alaska and Canada, and the kids were out. Perry ended up showing up at the festival in a helicopter. I mean, that's some other rock star shit that I don't really get. But yeah. I mean, I was like, oh, that was Perry, huh? You see a helicopter come in, and I was like, oh, well, I just don't. I was like, oh, okay, there's my singer there. Okay, cool. So yeah, at the most, it's usually three and a half weeks or something like okay. that. It's usually, you know, a week at a time or whatever. And now I'm home for till October. I'm really kind of excited. You know, I run I'm part of a sound company here called Nomad, yeah. right? And we are very we're close-knit. We're very everybody who works for Nomad is very talented, and they really love what they do and they love their job. Yeah, yeah, of course, everybody, all the musician friends here in town have worked with Nomad. Usually we get that, whew, you guys are on the gig, they take a sigh of relief because they know that we're going to take care of them, which I love being a part of that. I've been a part of me for about 8 years now, and but it looks like, hopefully, all fingers crossed, is that we got the main stage at Fun 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 Fest this year. And Jane's is headlining Fun 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 Fest.
Oh, really?
So, and I live 6 minutes walking to that park.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's like coming home, mixing one of my favorite bands. My sound company's got is doing the gig. So all my boys are going to be on deck. You know what I mean? It's going to be pretty cool. Plus, we get to, on top of that, we're headlining Voodoo Fest in New Orleans on Halloween night.
Oh, that's going to be badass.
I think it's going to be a little bizarre. And we're doing Ritual as well. So the whole record? Supposedly. I don't know. Yeah. Hopefully. That's what it's billed as. So,
how are they? Is there like a pretty big production right now with the show? With the dancers and the flying people and stuff? Is that a regular thing?
Yeah, it is. It's not, and I don't know about big production necessarily. I mean, some days we have a backdrop, sometimes we don't. So, but we always have the and call them hookers. They're not really hookers, but they're suspension artists, right?
Yeah.
And they actually get pinned before the show. Like, literally, they get a big hook put in their skin, under their skin. It's crazy. It is crazy. And then they get hung up for one song. It's usually Stop. But it's amazing to watch. And all these girls are really cool. But, you know, it's just kind of, it's bizarre. You know, like you see.
That was the thing. Remember, were you around when what's his name?
Lifto?
Yeah, Jim. Yeah.
Jim Rose.
No, just Lifto. Yeah, because he went out with a friend of mine and he became friends with my bass player. And there were so many times when I was like, man, what people do to not have to get a job.
Oh, sure.
You know what I mean? I will lift bricks with my penis.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
I mean,
look, you just takes one bad job or one day to fucking of washing dishes to go, man, I think I can hang something from my penis,
that's
right? Because like, I'm never going back to washing dishes again. You know what I mean? Like, you know,
yeah.
That's what I love about America. You know, you don't always have to get a job. You can hang your stuff from your penis. You know,
I thought that once when I was walking through Times Square and saw David Blaine was encased in ice for a week or something.
Okay. Yeah.
And that was my thought was like, wow, you know, I don't want to work. I would rather sit in ice for a week.
Yeah, but and you also think about it, like, you know, the struggle of working a regular job.
Yeah.
Right. And then you think of maybe the struggle of working a job that you love, that you want to achieve something, you know, that you're proud of, and you wake up in the morning and you're like, "This, I'm all about that." I go to bed, I'm still all about that.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you're making a little bit of money or millions of dollars, you know, you're going to be happier that way.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of how we're, you know, that's why I've worked really hard to get to do what I do. I still love what I do, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those, it's one of the coolest things that I could experience, is being able to wake up and go mix some bands and, you know, get to see some of the bands that are playing that are getting bigger, or, you know, get to work with Jimmy Vaughn, or, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
some of these cats that are like, you know, like, I cannot believe it. You know, the Robert Plant thing. I mean, it's just like, what? Really? Yeah. This is happening right now? The first gig I did with Janes, and I got to tell you, that, you know, it's funny because I try to play it down, but literally that's, this is one of my favorite bands of all times, and I'm running sound from. I'm 45.
Okay, yeah, I'm 46.
I'll be 46 next year.
They mean a lot to us.
And, you know, playing in bands and all that stuff, and it was like, man, that, it's just that mystique and the way they brought art into rock and the whole nine yards, right?
And it rocked. It wasn't like art rock that was like synthesizers and drum machines. It was fucking rock and roll art rock. Yeah.
And so my first gig with them was on my 45th birthday at Riot Fest in front of, I don't know, 20, 30,000 kids or something like that in Chicago. And I got really nervous, right? And I'm like, oh my God, I'm mixing one of my favorite bands. And then I was like, wait a minute, I've worked my whole life for this moment.
Yeah.
Why am I nervous? I know every guitar lick. I know every solo spot. Yeah. I know every, I mean, and then I was like, oh yeah, okay, let's go. You know, it just was like completely relief. But that's the thing is, you know, you work really hard and you can achieve your dreams. You can do whatever you want to do in life, and you don't ever have to go to work again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like, oh, dude, I can't believe I got to travel, you know, across the world to go mix this band. But really, I get to go travel across the world to go mix this band. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you just got to twist it around. Sometimes we're human and we, you know, it doesn't always register that we get to do all this cool stuff. But
yeah.
I mean, I could go wash dishes and be miserable.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to do that. No. You know? I mean, I'm just, you know, I wanted to be a rock star when I was a kid. I did. I totally wanted to play rock and roll and, you know, do all that stuff. And I realize now that I support my children still in music. And they have, you know, and I'm super grateful for that. Even at my age, I'm still grateful for that.
It's
you know?
It's about redefining success and adapting to reality as you get older. You know what I mean? When you have that dream and it's such a dream, it's so lofty.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not Bono. That's what I started out trying to be. You know what I mean? But I'm still very
happy. You
get
to be Johnny, though.
And proud of who I am.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm very happy with who I am.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm cool with it. And I feel like, wow, you know, I do make a living in music. And I'm a person in music who can go play music with people. And I mean, yeah, and I mean, I'm, you know, part of a community of people that support each other and
that's right.
support me, have always supported me and treated me very well, you know? It's pretty amazing.
That's one of the things I love about Austin, Texas. And, you know, I've been, you know, I've lived in different places and I spent lots of time in, you know, L.A., New York, you know, Chicago, Seattle. I mean, whatever. And Austin is one of those things that it has a community here that unlike anything I've ever experienced, you know. And the way that people come together, and we're talking about, you know, even when I was in the hospital, that wasn't my choice. That wasn't my idea to do a fundraiser thing, a GoFundMe thing for, you know, for my medical expenses. That was some friends of mine who were like, yo, we got to get this together. And, you know, L. John and John Nelson and, you know, put together this thing at the club and all this stuff. And I was like, okay, that's cool. I felt embarrassed more than anything. But the thing is about Austin is it's that community of, you know, I know so many musicians here and I've treated them with respect and love and caring with their and their craft and they've treated me with the same. And, you know, sometimes I look through my phone and I'm like, I can't believe I'm friends with this dude. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. It's like, these are the people that I love and care about, you know, and they come, and it's the same way. They love and care about me too. And that's the one thing I love about, you know, how some cities are, they're like crabs, right? Like anybody gets a little success and they want to pull them back down into the barrel or whatever. Here in Austin, the cool thing, and I learned this from Charlie Sexton actually years ago, was that we celebrate that shit. We
100% were like, absolutely. Class, that guy. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Oh, dude, Johnny just got this gig. Yes. All right. You know, that's the kind of thing that we want to do in this town. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like to lift people up, not try to bring people down, you know?
Yeah. That's funny that you say that. One, when I got a deal, I remember we were in David Berwald's studio in Venice and Charlie came there and he sat down. And I mean, I know him and he's my friend. And
sure.
I had never felt more like it was the most sincere and real, like, you doing okay?
Mm-hmm.
I know this is a lot of big stuff.
Oh,
people gave me a bunch of money to do this. There's some. It's totally different than what you've been doing this whole time. Are you okay?
Yeah.
Like, you got any questions? You need anything? Yeah. It was very sincere, very cool.
And that's what I think there should be more of that. You know, I mean, especially because, you know, you see the live fast, die young kind of thing. And, you know, I was guilty of that for years. I'm surprised. I mean, you know, I'm super grateful to be alive. You know what I mean? And, you know, I'm sober as well. And, you know, I've done a lot of stuff to get to this point. And, you know, to be actually to be as grateful as I am. But there's more people that need to reach out to younger kids, younger people, the panel stuff, you know what I mean? All that stuff in this community to be able to lift people up and go, you know what, you're going to go through some shit going through, you know, because when I started, there was, you know, there was no like plan. There was no internet. There was no nothing like that. It's just like you hung out with a bunch of, you know, dudes that were playing rock and roll. And it's like, how do we do this? You know what I mean? Like, okay, this is how we do it. Or that's how that person does it. Or I saw that guy play on stage.
Yeah.
There was some of that interaction, but nowadays there needs to be more of that interaction with younger people so they don't go down the same road of, you know, so-and-so rock star ends up dead in the hotel room or whatever that looks like.
Well, no,
you know
but
what I mean?
I believe that, I mean, people like, I mean, I include myself in this, but like having mentors when I was a kid, like Mark Hallman, Wayne Nagel, like, you know.
Wayne's the man.
Yeah. You know, people that really looked after you and knew you were really trying to do this and they took it serious. Like, you know, like they were like, oh, you want to do this? Okay, well, let's, you know.
Here's what we do.
Yeah, this is what you do.
Right.
Even though you're a kid, this is what you do. Do it.
Again, that's a totally Austin thing. I mean, you know, that you see pockets of it in other places, but I mean, that's an Austin thing to do. You got so many people that are working on all aspects of the band, from playing, you know, being the guitar rock god to being, you know, one of the, you know, premier managers in, you know, in town. Yeah. And we got the whole spectrum in between, right?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and the majority of people are approachable, you know?
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's one of the cool things about Austin music, you know, is that, you know, you can have those conversations with the people with, you know, that you want to do, like for younger people, you know, so.
Where did you're from Binghamton?
Binghamton, New York.
Where is that? Upstate?
Yeah, upstate. It's right outside.
I just drove through there on Saturday.
Where were you headed?
To Connecticut.
It's other direction.
Other way.
Other direction.
More upstate.
It's near Syracuse.
Okay.
Yeah. If you were in New York City going to Connecticut, it's the other.
Okay.
The other direction.
Way. Okay.
Yeah. But Binghamton is an industrial town. If it's miserable, it was miserable. It was a great place for a breeding ground to create music because there was nothing else to do.
Tough.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it used to be a thriving city. That's where IBM started, and that's where Rod Serling was from.
Oh, nice.
And there was, you know, of course, there's the mystique of, you know, Twilight Zone in Binghamton, New York. But, you know, we had a cool little punk rock scene, you know, back in the 80s or whatever. And there was a small amount of people there. And, you know, but you would all, it was a scene of, you know, they're trying to support it, and the scene was very small, so there was a tight knit, you know what I mean?
Right, right.
It's kind of Binghamton, New York. I have a tattoo on it that says "Never Answer 607," and that's the prefix of Binghamton.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Never Answer 607.
Yeah, it's just that's, you know, after my mother died, I realized that I wasn't going to go back there, right? And I was like, whew, all right. You know, I still got friends there and, you know, and all that. But when I moved to Austin, I was like, this is it. I'm staying
here.
When
did you move here?
99. Mm-hmm. And, but recently, which is, this is how the world acts, or this is how the world is sometimes. I got a call, hey man, can you come up and do an install in this club in Binghamton? I'm like, are you serious? Like, okay. It's the, you know, I flew up there, and this is all for Nomad, and, you know, we go up there, and it's it's me and my, again, this is me and John used to drink at this club, at this bar years ago, and it was like a biker bar. It was called the Appalachian Hotel. It was just a piece of shit, like, biker bar that, you know, lots of drugs, lots of whole, you know, whatever. And these people had come in and they bought it and they ripped it down to the studs, and kind of like what Steve did at Seaboys. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's very like, it was like, not trophies anymore.
Yeah, it's not, right? It's this nasty, cold club. Yeah. And it built it up, made this really beautiful wood, just gorgeous listening room or whatever, and they asked me to be a part of the install for the sound, and I just, you know, I was like, okay, I'll go to Binghamton and do this. You know, it was an Appalachian in New York, which is, you know, 5 minutes from Binghamton or whatever.
Right.
And so we did this thing, and, you know, we just did a bunch of press and all that stuff, like it's in the trade magazines and all that stuff, and it's kind of crazy how that works. Like, I'm just done with Binghamton. Well, come put my sound system in.
Yeah.
And again, this is where you get grateful. You're like, really? Why would you call me from Awesome. Well, we want you to be a part of that. It's like, really? Okay, cool, man. You know, we'll do that. So, you know, I got to bring a couple of the Nomad guys up there and show them my hometown, where I was born and where, you know, or where I grew up or whatever. I wasn't actually born there, but where I grew up. And it's just kind of funny driving through and doing that kind of thing. Like, yeah. Oh, this is where, you know, whatever. And, yeah. You know, but, yeah, Binghamton, New York.
So that's nuts. So what brought you to Austin? What did you do? Were you in Binghamton until 1999?
No, well, yes and no. I always lived in Seattle. I was in LA for a little bit. I was in, you know, I was spent a lot of time in New York City, East Coast. I was playing a lot. Yeah, I tried to go to other places. Just I had a let's say I had a lot of extracurricular activities in my younger years, and I used to have to leave town to try to, you know, do something different, you know, and I'd go somewhere and
to change your environment so you're not same.
But it didn't always work.
Right.
Okay. And so I ended up coming to Austin because a girl lived here.
Oh yeah.
She was going to UT. She was going to UT, and I came down here, and I used to see more friends on tour here, and I was like, wow, I love it here. You know, there's such a cool music scene, and I was so I ended up staying. You know? I was like, man, I'm going to stay in Austin. And now, you know, I used to wake up here and go, I cannot believe I live in Texas. You know, like, I can't believe I live in Texas.
Yeah.
You know, and now I'm like, yeah, I live in Austin, Texas. You know, that's where I live. This is my home. You know, this is where my kids are Texans, you know?
Yeah. Where do you, okay, so wait a minute. So you moved here, and then what did you start? When did you start at the Continental Club?
No. Before I got the gig at the Continental, I worked at Emo's for a little bit. Right. I worked at the Back Room for a little bit.
Oh.
That was my first gig, was the Back Room. I only stayed there for a couple months. When it's funny. Okay, so the story of the Continental Club was I had a gig at Red 7 before it became what it is. Me and a couple guys, I got a gig there. I ended up putting a new PA in there, and an old PA, but we tried to build it up, and it was very punk rock, to like do it yourself kind of thing. Sure. And it was cool to be a part of, watching a club start from the bottom. Like, how do we do this to, you know, I don't know if it's at the, it's not at the top anymore, but I just was six punk rock bands a night. I was like, I can't do this. And it's, you know, like, it was just too much. And my ears were really tired all the time. And anyway, so I was trying to get a gig, and I walked to somebody. Was like, yo, you should go see, you know, and I had known Bobby. I came up and I talked to Bobby, and I was like, hey man, are you looking for, you know, a sound guy? And he was like, well, I don't know right now. And I was like, here, just let me show you what I got or whatever. I'll just go mix this band. Right. I don't know which band it was, but I ended up jumping on stage and just putting everything together, mixing the band. And this is years ago, before the, you know, new PAs have been in there. And all that stuff. And it was rough in there. You know, I mean, a lot of people, and Bobby ended up, he was like, oh, well, okay. And he ended up giving me the job. And that's how the family started, is, you know, that whole situation. And since then, I've been there 9 years now. And, you know, the other funny thing is, you know, all my drinking years, like, literally all I wanted was the keys to a bar, right? Like, literally, I mean, just you know, you dream about, I drink, I just want to, you know, I want to hang out in a bar, I want the keys to a bar. Yeah. You know, I've been sober, and, you know, now I have the keys to the bar, and they actually trust me with it. And I'm like, oh, you know, like, I can't even be here at 4 a.m. I'd rather go to bed, you know. Like, man, shouldn't there be some sort of debauchery going on? But no, you know, now I got to be responsible and stuff like that. But, you know. The Continental Family is one of those things. I mean, you know, anybody who's in Austin knows the what the deal is with the Continental Club. And it's just, you know, again, I take a whole great pride with that place.
Oh, totally.
It's one of the, you know, I've worked real hard to get it up to musical standards. And we just put in a new sound system recently. It's a Meyer rig. I don't know if you've been in there recently, but it's top of the line now. Yeah. It's just
my thing is also back in the days of the Funky PA. Mm-hmm. The people that worked there knew what they were doing, and it always sounded good. It wasn't like, you know, but I don't know. I don't know how much you listen to this show, but I do. I say it often. Anybody that is ever come, like, you know, you're a musician, you live here, you have friends coming in. Hey, I got a friend coming into Austin.
Oh yeah.
Where should they go?
Yeah.
And I'm like, just go to the Continental Club. Okay, who's playing? I'm like, just go to the Continental Club. Yeah. I promise.
Yeah.
You have to be this good to play there. Yeah. So the talent's going to be this good. It's going to be awesome. There's the coolest people are there.
Yeah.
And just go there. There's two places. You can go in the down part. It's going to be amazing. Go upstairs in the upstairs part, the gallery. It's going to be amazing. And now Seaboys, too. I mean, there's a quality
and
to
place. I live in a neighborhood. I walk everywhere.
That's amazing.
And that's one of the cool things about Austin as well, is that I've worked really hard to get my little spot in Austin.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's all over there. You know what I mean? Yeah, like the South Congress area. I mean, I didn't really like country music before I started working at the club, right?
Sure.
And I mean, honestly, I didn't. I was, you know, like a punk rock snob or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And just was like, I wasn't really open to a lot of that stuff. And Dale changed my complete life when it came to that. And I was like, Monday nights was my gig for years. Yeah. It was like Monday nights and Dale. And I was like, man, I don't like country. But he turned me on that. He was like, this is the deal, you know? And that was the real deal. Because I guess what I had heard wasn't the real deal.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Oh, this is it. This is what I plug into, you know?
Yeah.
So I have a complete, you know, appreciation for that now. But it's funny because even some of the music that was going, like some of the bands that play at the club, I'm not, you know, that's not something I would go home and listen to or whatever. But, you know, the what you're talking about, the level of musicianship there is always top of the line.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there's no bullshit
there.
It's
so top of the line that when you go upstairs to the gallery and you look at the PA and you're like, okay, a band's going to play up here.
It's
going to be kind of funky.
Yeah, yeah.
It still sounds amazing because the people that are playing there know how to play to a room. And that just takes
We tried real hard. It's funny. I put the new PA downstairs and I put a powered head upstairs or whatever, right? And that Continental Club, the gallery is, you know, it's not top of the line PA, but the deal is that's the scene. You know what I mean? Like, it's that thing. Like, you do it yourself, and then you get down, and you see some of the shows. Some of my favorite shows have been up there.
That's
sweaty dancing. You know what I mean? And like,
dude, it's making the hair on my arm stand up. That's
like
what I got into this.
That
for.
Groove. It's like that's happening right here, and it's a small little area, and you're like, I just tapped into something special, and being part of that is just really, really cool. You know.
Also, I think at this point, if I went up those stairs and Celeste was like, "Hey, Johnny, check out the new sound system," I'd be like, "Oh
no."
No.
Don't
Why?
Do that. Yeah.
Why?
We tried to recreate the same thing at Seaboys, right? And it's not going to happen.
It's got to be its own thing.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just not going to happen.
It's so like, unique up there.
Why can't we do the same thing in the gallery? I'm like, because it's not. The gallery is something special that has created, you know, it's built.
It's its own thing.
It's, you know, everybody has put into it and created this thing. You know what I mean? So it's, you know, it's kind of hard to recreate that, you know, and I think that's what, you know, that's the problem with the gift and the curse of Austin, right? You know, people, there's so many cool things in Austin, people want to recreate that in a fucking condo, you know what I mean? They're like, but you can't recreate that. It's not pre-packaged, you know what I mean? Like, that's something that people put their time, their sweat, their energy into, and it creates something awesome. You can't just build that shit down on Red River or wherever, you know
it
what
just,
I mean?
It just dawned on me that it's not make Austin weird, it's keep Austin weird. Like, you gotta leave leave that stuff.
That's it,
You can't create weirdness for yourself at the W.
Mm-mm, no.
Even though that's cool on its own, you know, it's got its own thing.
Look, I love being able to go to certain places and be like, you know, I love that Austin is here and that's happening. But you know what? The problem being with a lot of that stuff is we're trying so hard to create something that doesn't need to be fucked with.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's like, no, it's not it, man. You know, we just need to cultivate this. you know, instead of build this and bring more people that are complaining about music. Right. How do you do that?
Yeah.
How do you live? How do you move into a live music district and complain that there's live music?
Yeah.
You know, even we've had issues.
That's a difficult to me. That's the kind of stuff that the city should get involved in rather than trying to get musicians affordable housing.
And then there's the fine line, right? Yeah. There's the fine line. Where does the city come in and go, you know, could you imagine if somebody go, you can't live here because you don't like music,
right?
Or whatever. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? It's that fine line, right?
It like, is a fine line.
We see both. I try to see both sides, you know, but you know, honestly, if I was moving into a new city, I'd like try to put in a little research on where I'm moving to. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
you buy this condo across the street from Cheer Up Charlie's in Mohawk.
Yeah, you're like, come on, dude. You know, you're not gonna you're gonna think this is the coolest shit ever until the boredoms play, right?
Yeah, or
you know,
exactly.
Or whatever. You know what I mean? Like till some
you
noise
gotta get up early for a flight.
Until some noise band plays and you're like, oh, this is horrible, you know. you thought what, Christina Aguilera was gonna play across the street?
Nah,
it's not gonna happen. Whatever, you know, but That's the thing I like. You know, there's a lot of us that are still very much involved with awesome music and want to support that in a lot of different ways. And the stuff that's going on around in Austin, Austin's is growing. And I love that about Austin. You know, I'm a sales guy, a nomad. You know, the more people that move here, we got business and work and all that stuff. And a business standpoint, that's awesome. You know what I mean? We can support it, but it gets really annoying when you're sitting on Mopac when you have to go to City Hall to talk to City Hall about their officers who don't know what a dB meter is and they're giving out tickets. You know what I mean? Like that kind of stuff is super annoying. It's like, okay, we want growth and we want, you know, commerce and all this stuff, but that goes with, you know, from the ground level up, you know what I mean? Not just from the top down, you know,
right.
Just can't be like that. I mean, we went in, a lot of cops there's one officer for all the zones of audio for the noise limit in town, right? And I don't know if they've changed it and made it, and I'm hoping that they had
so it's one guy going everywhere,
right? Okay. There's different zones or whatever. There's one guy and who actually knows what he's doing, right. And you got the beat cop that gets the call, right? And he shows up and he doesn't have a dB limit. He's just going to write you a ticket.
Right.
Or tell you to turn it down and then write you a ticket.
Right.
And it's like, you know, you don't get to do that. Do you know what we're talking about? You know what I mean? Like why one angry neighbor can ruin it for everybody and the cops are going to make it even worse because they're not informed of how to enforce that. And it's even worse downtown. I couldn't imagine. You know what I mean? On my little section of South Congress, the majority of people are cool, and the majority of people have, have come to terms with the fact that they moved in next to Seaboys or that they're behind the Continental Club. But we're also very cautious about that too. Like we at Seaboys during the week, we don't have music past midnight, you know, and we try not to have like loud bass and all that because we're in a neighborhood. You know what I mean? Like we have music that goes past midnight, but I mean, it's like we try not to during the week, just out of respect for the people next door, you know?
Well, that's you got to cohabitate. You got
to
keep
the doors closed and all
together.
That stuff.
Yeah,
exactly. But I mean, the stuff downtown, I don't know, you know, I feel bad for James Moody at the Mohawk. You know, he's got to do all sorts of, you know, all that stuff. He created this really cool space down there and the transmission guys, you know what I mean? And they're getting completely fucked with because of the city and all the stuff that they want to do. And, you know, the whole, the Waller Creek corridor and all that stuff. And there's a lady that lives up on like 51st Street that complains all the time about stubs. You know what I mean? Because of the bass and it just travels up the corridor, right?
All right.
I'm not involved. I don't know what that all looks like, I'm just saying like it only takes one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like we're in a beautiful experience. We can have a beautiful experience here in Austin. You know what I mean? And we got too many people that were living here like, oh, this isn't the way Austin's supposed to be. It's like, where are you from? You know what I mean? Like, are you from here? Have you put the time in here to have that, you know? So, I don't know, this is my little rant about Austin. I love this place, you know what I mean? I want to support it. I want it to succeed in a way that everybody can be a part of it, you know?
Sure.
But, you know.
It's a tough one. Hey, let me ask you a quick question
on
the side. Since you started to say there's a lady, and then you paused, and I thought you were going to say, who's sure all that glitters is gold. And this was going to lead into my next question. What is Robert Plant like in his monitors? Like, what's he like?
A lot of him.
Can I get a little kick drum?
No, it's a lot of him.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's what I like him on.
Yeah. I mean, it, you know, he's the...
It's not narcissistic. You're just making sure you're fucking doing it right.
We had, you know, when he played at the Continental, we had to put in a new... We brought in different monitors, and we brought in some. We brought in a monitor board and all this different stuff. And Roy Taylor, who was mixing Patty, mixed the show, and and I got to run monitors for it. And you know, at one point I was a little nervous, but then you know, I had met Robert a bunch of different times, and I just realized that you know, it's the same thing. It's like, well, this is what I do. Let's, you know, yeah. I want to make him happy. Right, how do we make Robert play? What, how can I help? Without being too, like, you know, subservient or whatever. It's just, you know, what do you need? How can I make, you know, are you hearing everything you need to hear, you know? And it's usually just, you know, him. Keep in mind, he's been doing this a lot of years, and he's kind of deaf.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I can imagine, dude. Imagine going through the 70s, you know, the 60s.
I couldn't imagine. I mean, yeah, because you think I've been to Rock and Roll Hall of Fame a bunch of times, and they have like this one section for sound. Heel Sound was there, right? And it's got this old mixer and all this stuff, and I was like, wow, you know, could you imagine having to lug gear like that, or just doing some of these shows? Like, you know, we have it easy nowadays. You know what I mean? Considering, you know, I mean, I would still use some of that gear just the way it sounds or whatever. But I mean, to actually put on a show like that, you know, super loud. You know,
hey, what is that cool Neve preamp direct box thing that you were using for Dave's guitar on Jane Says and on Perry's vocal before the delay?
Well, it's the new it's the new Neve DI box, and it's just it's got the Rupert Neve circuitry in it.
Yeah,
and it just sounds amazing. If I can use it, I'll use it on everything. You know, any of the gigs that I've done in the last couple of years, I've used that. You know, on the Social Distortion, the Jane's Addiction. You know,
oh, you did the Social Distortion too.
Mm-hmm, I did. I was in Europe with them recently. It's in my kit, you know, my mic kit. I bring those boxes everywhere I go. I mean, it's revolutionary. It just sounds so much better than any of the other DI boxes out there. It just sounds so good. It's just warm, and it just, and I use the Master Bus Processor as well, which is, you know, it's a studio thing, but we're using it live more and more. I brought it out on the road with Jimmy, because Jimmy wasn't, we weren't carrying production with Jimmy, and in any room that I walked into, I'd put it on left and right. And it just warmed up the room and just made it tighter. And no matter what speakers, that shitty system or anything like that, it just made the sound so much, you know, brighter. And it's got this cool little thing. It's got a silk button. It's called a silk button, right? And it's really nice, bright, bright blue. And it's funny how you're like, well, if I press this button, is it really going to be silky? And it's like, you press that button and it is, you know, it's like your definition of audio silkiness, you know what I mean? It's like, wow, this is so cool. And they got a great thing going on up in Wimberley, you know?
Right.
And that's, you know, that's the thing. It's right outside of town.
Yeah.
And if you've ever met Rupert, I mean, he's one of the,
I've never met him.
That dude is amazing. I mean, a
guy that was his lawyer is a friend of mine.
Okay.
And he got me like 10 years ago to ask me if I would try out an acoustic preamp at some shows, and I did. And then I was supposed to tell him what I thought, and I think like what I wrote, like, oh yeah, dude, this thing was awesome, man. Thanks.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you need to tell me what you thought.
Oh.
So then I was like, oh, sorry. And so I went through that, you know, it warmed up my guitar a lot and I really enjoy, you know.
That dude speaks, when he talks, I mean, he's very personable and he's approachable and all that. But when he starts talking about the circuitry and all that stuff, it's like my eyes almost glaze over because it's hard to follow. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it's like the guy,
you know
what I mean?
Yeah, he's done it. He's done it. And all the records that you ever listen to, and I'm a big record collector. A lot of the records that I are some of my favorites. I'm like, oh, that was recorded on a Neve console. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like that's, you know, that's the cool stuff right there.
Yeah. So when you fly, wait, let me ask you a question on vocal mics and stuff, like the dude from, who's the singer from Mike Ness? the guy from Social Distortion.
Yeah.
And then like Perry, like you use different mics for those guys, or they have their own mics. Are you left up with the choices of that?
Yes, I'm usually left up to those choices. The Mike Ness has got, you know, we got the Telefunken stuff.
Okay.
I am a Telefunken endorsee, so I gotta kind of tell you all about Telefunken only because it's amazing. You know what I mean? Like the gear is, the people are great. The gear that they're making, obviously, we know all about Telefunken microphones.
Right,
You know, there's nothing like a Telefunken and an Eve. You know what I mean? Like seriously, you can make some of the best records with one microphone and one channel strip. You know what I mean? Like literally. But the Telefunken mics, the M80s and the M81s, and I use a lot of the stuff on drums. And that's my go to stuff.
Okay.
But like Mike will use a Telefunken, and any of the bands that I work with that don't have the Telefunken stuff, I'll instantly go, hey, have you tried the Telefunken stuff? Because it just makes it, the presence is a lot different, and it makes it sound so much better. Don't get me wrong, I love a 58. I do. Yeah. I use 58. I used a 58 last night. You know what I mean? Like, it's not about that. It's about what, you know, consistency and, you know, a different rooms call for different microphones and different, you know, different sounds. And, you know, the Continental Club, we have lots of Telefunken microphones. I mean, we have
whole,
yeah, oh yeah, we do. We're endorsed over there as well. So it's,
That's pretty unique. I don't know any other clubs that are.
Yeah. I mean, I've worked real hard to get that club up to standards in that sense. I mean, we got the Meyer thing. I worked on that for 2 years to try to get Meyer to come in and do a sound system in there. And they finally did. And, you know, I even went to visit the factory out in Oakland and Berkeley and, you know, talked to John and Helen. And like, you know, they love the Continental Club. They heard all about it. They're like, this is your premier place. And, you know, now they send, they're like, hey, we got some people in town. You know what I mean? Can we record? And we're talking about Lars early. You know, we have the same monitors that Metallica beta tested. You know, these MJF-12. And they built them for Metallica, you know. But we have them at the club, you know. It's kind of cool. But the Telefunken microphones are the same. You know, the deal is that Perry sings through Sennheiser, and he always has, and that's just his deal. And
I figured he would have to have his own.
That's just kind of his deal, right? You can't. It's funny because if you were to hand him a Shure microphone, some artists are like, oh, it doesn't matter, I'll sing through anything, you know. But if you were to hand him like a Shure microphone, a 58, he'd be like, no, this isn't my mic.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Oh, it doesn't matter. This isn't my mic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's just instantaneous. So we always carry his mic. It's just the way it is.
It's also Perry. I mean, like
Perry,
you know what I mean? There's a voice that you
you know, and
that's
you know,
a very
that's
special.
Something he knows too.
God, it must be fucking awesome.
It's pretty cool.
Awesome to watch them every night.
It still gives me chills when they start with Up the Beach. It just, you know, it literally it gives me chills, and I still am amazed. I mean, I'm like, whoa, I get to do this, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. How about Jimmy? How's he? It must be interesting to see him play every night. That guy's in a.
That when I got the call for that gig, I was super grateful as well, but I just, you know, I've always been a blues fan, and I just, you know, I only knew a little bit, right?
Yeah.
I thought I knew something. I thought I knew
something. Yeah, yeah.
I only knew a little bit, right? And sitting with him on the bus late night, him like playing licks, and there was a couple times and I was just like, am I really here right now? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's fucking Jimmy Vaughn, you know?
Yeah.
One of the coolest things, and I don't know if anybody's watched it yet, but the induction that he did for Stevie.
Fucking awesome, yeah.
I literally, it you know,
beautiful.
Knowing that whole backstory and knowing what he, you know, I mean, that was pretty amazing. But watching him play every night, I mean, he's just like, he's like the epitome of cool. You know what I mean? Like that's the man right there, you know?
So cool.
Such a good dude. Such a you know, he's approachable, but he's funny as all get out. And, you know, he likes to have fun. He's still at the, you know. He still can play, you know. Like I don't know if you come down to the Sea Boys on the weekends when he's playing with the organ trio with Flanagan.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, that shit is happening, man.
Yeah, I've seen him upstairs at the gallery.
Yeah, I mean, it's a groove, you know.
Plus, also the gallery is the kind of place where you're gonna walk up there and there's eight people and Jimmy Vaughn is a dude playing on the stage.
Yeah, and that's one of the other things. It's like I brought people up there and like, hey man, you want to go see Jimmy? And like, you know, oh yeah, okay, cool. Do we have to pay? Do we have to wait in line?
Yeah,
I'm like, no, just come on. We'll go up and
no one knows he's up there yet,
and no one knows he's up there. And like, we're sitting there watching Jimmy into a, you know, to just to, you know, 20 people or something like that. Yeah. And it's not like he's not playing to the arena. He's still playing. And the deal is, I think
he's a 10,000 guy.
Yeah. And I think the deal is that up there, and that's in that environment, it's not like, hey, I'm going to play flashy and all that shit. It's like, man, I'm going to get into it because, you know, this is what music is all about. Right. Yeah. You know? It's kind of cool.
Flanagan's really, he's really developed something really special, hasn't he, with his music and with his his organ thing. Like, he's just really...
If you haven't seen him with Dave Biller, I don't know if you know who Dave is.
I might have.
Oh, get hip, man. That dude is one of the... I'm telling you, he's one of those cats that can just blow your mind kind of guitar player.
Yeah.
And he sits in a lot with Flanagan as well. Okay. And it's just, you know... He played bass with Dale for a long time, and then he played guitar, and then he was, and for a long time he was just not, he wasn't playing guitar anymore. He was just playing pedal steel.
Oh, wow.
And but he went back to playing guitar with Flanagan, and it's just really cool to watch.
I mean,
something special. If you're here next Saturday, yeah, I think at the 18th,
yeah,
or 13th, something like that. 18th.
Oh, you mean the next Saturday?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Oh,
okay.
Well, I might be. Oh, I think I am, but I'm playing like a private thing at the Hole in the Wall early. So yes, what happens?
I'll tell you off my.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. There's something happening that you should be a part of. It'd be cool.
What else? I'm glad that we got to sit down and talk because I've seen you for years and said hi and stuff.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I was always kind of intimidated by you.
I don't know why.
Not as bad as... Well, you're, like, tough.
Oh, well,
I always think tough guys are going to be... I still, like, I'm 46 years old. I still feel 12 when I see tough guys.
Well, you just see me with my kids. It just completely changes everything. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. I get that a lot for some reason, and I'm not sure. And it was probably even worse when I had dreadlocks, though.
Yeah.
Because it was like, you know, who is this Viking-looking dude? You know, and I'm like... like, dude, I'm just trying to be, you know, I'm just trying to have fun and, you know, be nice, you know?
Yeah.
You know, that's a whole old persona, you know?
Yeah.
And it, you know, it, granted,
probably helps when you need to be left alone.
It's funny because, you know, ever since I've been sober, this is one of the things that I've changed a lot over the years is because, you know, I don't have to do the, you know, I don't want to be intimidated. I don't want to do any of that stuff. You know what I mean? I want to.
Just want to be you.
I do want to be me, and I've actually cultivated the person that I am to a person of love and tolerance to, you know, all human beings now. And before I wasn't necessarily like that, but I didn't really like who I was. So it just came out, you know, in other ways, you know, like, you know, gruff and, you know, dismissive and, you know, drunk. But, you know, luckily I don't, you know.
How long have you been sober?
9 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's you know, it's pretty amazing. And, you know, I work, you know, without going too much into it, I work with a lot of in town with who's Sims and Ham and stuff like that to give back and be a part of you know, because there's a lot of people are struggling with addiction and you know, I know when I got sober, I didn't know how to do anything without a drink in my hand or without something, and you know, one cool thing about giving back to that is being able to show somebody like they showed me, you know, you can have a cool music career or you could, you know, you can still be in music or you can do whatever you want to do and you can do it sober, you know, and being able to give that back to some struggling addict in early sobriety or whatever that is, you know, is a really cool experience.
I heard a great story from Jason Segel, the actor.
Mm-hmm.
He just got sober a few years ago.
Okay.
And he was on a podcast talking to this dude, and when he was saying, he was like, you know, you do have to relearn and you just don't think you can be happy again. And you just are kind of, it puts you in a funk, man, because you're facing shit that you were avoiding facing in yourself, you know, for so long. And now you're facing and just kind of like, God, is there ever like levity and just like what the feeling that you get when you get to have a drink and you're like, all right, what's next?
Yeah.
Like it wasn't happening. And he said,
that happens on the eighth day. Yeah.
He was driving from San Diego to LA, and he was like 3 months sober and was noticed himself singing and like kind of dancing along with the song on the radio. And then he was like, oh,
that's it.
I'm fucking happy.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He found his moment.
And the cool thing is you can cultivate that. You know what I mean? It's just like planting seeds. You know, you just got to water it and you know, watch it grow.
But it must be difficult, though, when you first get sober to have to be in bars all the time. I mean, that must be a little odd.
So, you know, without getting into it too much, but, you know, I was willing to give up music to really? Be sober.
Wow.
I didn't want to do anything anymore. I didn't want to be alive. I didn't want to do any of that stuff. And I was like, you know, I'm not, I don't even want to play guitar. I don't even look at those things. I went and painted houses for the first 8 months of my
That's
sobriety. And I was like, you know, I just don't want any part
did
of
you
music.
Go paint houses with Dickie Lee?
Really? But that would have been cool though.
No, I did.
Did you?
I did that, yeah.
I would love to paint houses with Dickie Lee. Well, not anymore. I don't know if I take that back. I'm not sure if I really want to paint houses.
but
you know, that being said, I would, you know, that would have been cool to paint houses with Dickie Lee.
I was on a paint crew that was me, Troy Campbell.
No shit. Really?
David Halley.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, it was a pretty funny group of people.
See, that's the other thing I love about Austin. So you never know what people are going to do. You know, because obviously sometimes the joke is here in Austin is sometimes we have to leave town to make any money.
Yeah.
You know, and granted, there's musicians that are, I mean, just amazing that are playing every night here making $50-$100. You know what I mean? And is that sustainable? Not necessarily, especially with all the people that are coming in and out. You know, it's not necessarily sustainable. The rents are raising and all. You were talking about that, like, you know, you got your little spot and you don't want to lose it, right? You know? You know, we all feel like that, you know, and, you know, being priced out of your neighborhood, that sucks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, could you know, having to move wherever. You know, I remember moving way south, like Slaughter, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the fuck? I don't live here. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm living
here.
I'm living here,
but I don't live here. You know what I mean? Like, seriously, that's one of those things. And I had to move back into town, and that's, you know, and I say into town, people are joking because, you know, you live in LA or something like that. You're used to living in a car, but I'm not. This is Austin, Texas. You
I
know, we don't
walk.
Have to do this.
Yeah,
know?
I want to walk. We
want to walk, or I want to be. I'll be there in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, I said, hey, I left my house in 10, and I was like, hey, I'm going to be a couple minutes later. I was 4 minutes late.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's, you know, I live not too far away, but that's with going to get juice. You know,
it
can still happen. But,
so I have your number now, so I can text you and call
anytime,
you. We can go
anytime,
eat lunch and
day
get
night.
Juice and coffee and
stuff.
Oh,
yeah, absolutely.
Dude, I really like you.
Yeah, I like you too.
People were right. I'm going to call everyone, Todd Wolfson, everyone, and just be like, you weren't kidding.
Yeah.
That guy is the coolest. You really are fucking cool.
Thanks, man.
And I'm glad you're alive. I'm glad you made it through
I'm glad to be alive too.
These illnesses. And I'm glad, I'm very happy to have you here. Is there anything I'm missing, man? I'm sure a lot. We're going to do this again.
I hope so. I mean, it's enjoyable.
Like you should be a recurring guest.
This is the only time that, you know, I've done lots of stuff over the years of interviews and whatever. And I'm not bragging or any of that shit. But the one person that I want to hang out with and talk to was you.
And I've listened
to the podcast and I've listened to, and we have very mutual friends that
Tons.
We love and the whole nine yards, right? And it's like, why are we not hanging out?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So let's go hang out.
Yeah.
Right. So thanks for having me. You know?
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for being on.
Yeah.
For a long time, people told me this would be a great podcast. That was an understatement, man. That was a great, great, great conversation with a fantastic dude, man. What a great guy, man. A survivor, a real, real guy out there. Jamie Wellworth, fantastic guy. Remember when you're out there at a Jane's Addiction show or you're at the Continental Club or at C-Boys, he's making it sound good. That's Jamie's job. He does it well, and he's a great hang, all right? Looking forward to getting to know him even more. So thank you for coming on the show, Jamie. You're a fantastic dude, and we did it. We did the podcast. So, hey, man, check it out, guys, out there in podcast land. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes if that's how you listen to it, or you can find us on Stitcher. If you stream your podcast, you can find us on there. Stream this show. You'll get a new show every Tuesday, every Friday. And while you're out there on the internet, don't forget that you can like our Facebook page. You will get updates on bands, on life, on me, on the show. So do that. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram as well. I am at Johnny Gowdy. All right. Let's hear some more magic music from Dupree featuring the great Mike Flanagan, who will be on the show in a couple weeks. So look forward to that. And another great member of the Continental Club gang, all right? Great place, Continental Club. Get out there if you haven't been there. If you come to Austin, you're not from Austin, get out there. Go check it out. Go to the gallery. Go to C-Boys. Go to Continental Club. Do it. It's beautiful. All right, let's hear some more music from Dupree, and thank you so much for being on the show, Jamie, and thank you for listening. People, have a great, great weekend. Let's get down.